This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. It is time for the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jenny Nyman, and I am hijacking the Kenai Conversation today for KDLL Adventure Talks. Got a presentation with Elizabeth Appleby, and she's going to be talking about backcountry ice skating. Hi, Elizabeth. How's it going?
Hi, good. Thanks so much for having me.
So before we get into all of that, we're going to do a deep dive into you. No.
Okay.
As her eyes get wide, what did I get myself into? But you're kind of new to us in the community. So who are you? Where did you come from? What do you do?
Yeah, so I work for the city of Kenai. I'm the city planner. I've been here about a year and a half. I lived in Anchorage for 4 years before I moved to the Kenai area. And I'm from Wisconsin originally, and before I moved to Alaska, I came up three separate summers, and so by the second summer, I knew I wanted to relocate to Alaska, so I was kind of bouncing all over for the summer. So I was in Kodiak and Palmer, and then the last summer was in Anchorage, but it's good to be here now.
Nice. Well, welcome to the Kenai Peninsula. A little belated. I'm sure somebody welcomed you by now. You probably weren't waiting for somebody to, hey, thanks for coming. But you come from snow country then in Wisconsin. So winter, even though you were up here in the summers checking it out, winter's probably not too terrifying for you.
Yeah, I grew up just north of Milwaukee. So I started ice skating at a really young age. I think about two, I started on the double bladed skates, where there's like two blades, so it's harder to fall when you're a little kid.
Oh, I was gonna ask what the virtue of that is.
Okay. Yeah,
like training wheels for ice skates
basically. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I've always ice skated, and I still hold a bit of a sentimental value to it because it's been something that has been a part of my life for so long. But the backcountry ice skating was something I didn't start doing until maybe three or four years ago. So not until I was in Alaska, because it just was so foreign to me to go on a lake that no one had groomed with a Zamboni, or they weren't like hours telling you when you're supposed to be there. And so a skating where it was just a lake that had frozen, where you're just going out, was something I've really enjoyed getting into the last few years.
So is that not something people in Wisconsin do very much, or just not something you had gotten into?
Yeah,
in Wisconsin?
I do think people do that. I think where you go out on lakes, but I grew up in a suburb of Milwaukee, and so I had never experienced that, where I would just go on a random lake and skate in Milwaukee.
Yeah, a little harder to get away from development if you're a suburb of a big city like that.
Yes.
How did you learn or find out about backcountry ice skating? Did you have friends who did it when you got up here? Did you see a picture somewhere? Did you hear about it somewhere?
Yeah, a mix of both. So I was in graduate school already knowing I wanted to move to Alaska when I was finished with graduate school. And so I was reading a news story, and it was people were ice skating on Potter's Marsh, and that was the first time I had heard of where you could just go skate, because I had driven past Potter's Marsh that summer to go hiking, and just that, like, really, people would just go out there and skate on it when it froze? Like, that was just totally new. And so then I started looking up stuff online, and it's like all excited. Oh, whenever I move to Alaska, this is what I'm going to do. And so then from there, I still didn't buy the Nordic blades, or I still used my figure skates. I took the first step to going out on Potter's Marsh, or lakes that had just frozen but weren't maintained by anyone, still using my figure skates. And then from there, then I got the Nordic blades. So they did attach to my ski boots, so they can clip on and off. And so from there, that's where I could do more of a connected lake all-day adventure. And there, I'm glad I could draw on the knowledge of the community that was already here to know where to go and what safety considerations and what gear I needed.
Yeah, there is quite a community of backcountry ice skaters, which I'm sure has been here all along, but with social media now, you can creep on those people a lot more than you used to be able. I feel like I know a lot. I've never met these people, but I'm like, oh, yeah, so-and-so was out. Oh, well, he had a great weekend, looks like. Awesome. I don't know this person, but there's a really active Facebook group, right, for backcountry ice skating?
There is, yes. Yeah, that's actually my main source of conditions information. So I do watch the weather, and I'll look at what my friends also post on social media. But there is a Facebook group called Nordic Skate South Central, and people post where they've skated. And it's really useful because ice skating is so condition dependent, where when it's good, you kind of just have to go because it could snow, and then you can't skate on the ice. So it has to be cold without snow for there to be good ice to skate on. And again, that group was Nordic Skate South Central, and it's a really great source of information on conditions. And then people also do post some safety stuff, or I don't know, even just inspirational, like international places in like Scandinavian countries where they also skate. And so I really recommend that as a good source of information.
Yeah, it gets you excited to get out there. And for me anyway, it's given me a lot of ideas of places to go that I don't, that's not my first and favorite thing that I do outside. But once you see those pictures, like, yeah, that looks cool. Okay, yeah. I will trek out to that thing. But then the danger, like you say, is it's so condition dependent that if you saw a post, 4 days ago, and then by the time you get out there, it could be a completely different experience.
Yes. Yeah. So it's good to have use social media or people in town who may have been where you want to skate recently, but always use your own judgment when you're out there. A good way you could do that is an ice screw. So people use those for ice climbing, but it's sort of a lightweight way to test the ice thickness. I think there are other more specialty devices where you can measure the ice thickness, but
you're saying my chisel is not a specialty device?
It probably is, but the ice screw is like one lightweight option where you can at least poke a hole in the ice and gauge the depth. I tap on the ice, I just kind of look around and look for any inlets or outlets of water and be extra careful around there because the whole lake could be frozen, but then where the outlet is, it might not have frozen there. So just kind of never stop eyeing your surroundings. Like not to the extent where you're not enjoying the experience, but just like anything you do outside, where like it's akin to skiing through different terrain. Like you, just because it looked good at the start, well, now you're in a different area. So you just want to keep looking around and, maybe make another hole if you're uncertain. And it varies on the days, like how vigilant I am about safety. Because some days, if the ice is frozen pretty solid, then I don't pay as much attention to checking. But where it's, if it's just frozen and I'm a little iffy on the thickness, then I might stop before I go on to look around and test the thickness.
Yeah, so it's kind of akin to avalanche safety, right? It's not only the conditions of the day that you're out there, it's also what has happened in the previous week or the previous month or the previous winter.
Yes.
So you could, ice, and I am a chicken when it comes to ice. Like if I've seen truck tracks on a lake, like, okay, I guess I'm okay now. I am not going to be the first one out there testing ice. But there are, I know logically it only takes a couple of inches to support a person and you are fine if you take the time to test it and all of that. But I get a little weirded out, especially early in the season when lakes will kind of start to freeze and then maybe thaw again. And you get overflow, which is where it has frozen. And then you've had a thaw event with like rain or snow melt on top of the ice and you're going along and suddenly you're in water. You haven't fallen through. There's just water on top of the still solidly frozen ice. So do you, early season, do you use any extra precautions? Are you watching like weather patterns? Are you looking at forecasts? How do you approach that?
Yeah, I guess I'll talk about a Swan Lake skate I did So this year, the Swan Lakes Loop froze, where you could skate the lakes and then walk the portages. So you could get to, I forget how many, like, I don't know, like 16 or 17 lakes in this loop, and it was fantastic.
And that's Swan Lake out Swanson River Road, and then out Swan Lake Road out of Sterling. So it's a commitment to drive, but it's a canoe trail system in the summer, but then you can also get out in the winter and enjoy that too.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So in the Kenai Refuge. And, but the year before, I went around Thanksgiving weekend, and that year the ice had not frozen. So there's also the Swan Lake and the Swanson River. So I think this year, the year it hadn't frozen super well, my skating party and I, we decided to try the Swanson River Loop. And that was the most iffy skating I've ever done, where the ice looked like it had just frozen. We didn't see like a single other person out there, but we still decided to go for it because we felt that it was okay. But that's where my friend didn't put her full body weight on the ice, and then she like put the ice screw in. And then I decided to be the first like guinea pig out there, and we were prepared to walk though, so didn't feel at all, if we felt the ice wasn't good, we would get out and walk. So I guess that was a precaution we took, where we just decided to walk all of the any connections where normally you might be able to skate through this little slough that connected the lakes. We walked all of those, and then we spaced ourselves out too. Like I guess they tell you to do that for like backcountry skiing too, but
right. If somebody has an issue, you don't all want to be in the same group. And
yeah. So we spaced our weight out, and we actually had the smallest person not go first, 'cause we didn't want like the lightest person to get over the ice.
It's and fine, everybody. Yeah. You weigh 90 pounds. Shut up. You don't count.
Yeah, exactly. So that day we took some extra care. I also carry the ice picks. So if I did fall through, they're ready. So I could like dig into the ice and pull myself out.
And those are, is that like a old school, like mitten string that you used to have?
Correct.
So what, do you get those somewhere? Do you make them yourself? How do those come about?
I asked my mom for them for Christmas.
Ask a mom for safety equipment, they're probably going to come through.
Yes. So I think I found them online and she could buy them, but
there's
available.
Literally like a string that goes through your sleeves and around your jacket, and they're kind of, do they just like dangle by your hands, or are they secured somehow?
They dangle by your hands, or sometimes I won't do the old school string, and I'll just keep them like in a pocket, because if I fall through, then I know, okay, I can just like reach my pocket real quick.
And they're spikes. So if you fall through and you bob back up out of the ice, you know, it's tough to pull yourself out because you don't have anything to grab onto. So these are sharp pointy implements, which sounds kind of sketchy to skate around with, but they're actually a safety tool, and then you can jab those into the ice, right, and have some purchase to pull yourself
back out.
Okay.
The ice skewer, I guess, could also be used in an emergency. So ideally in your pack you would have a dry bag too, so that if someone fell through, there's dry clothes, and then if you leave a little air, it gives you a little flotation.
Oh, there you go. Buoyancy, that's a good thing.
So all of this, I will talk about a time I did fall through the ice, but I wasn't actually in Alaska. But anyway, I also sometimes will carry a throw rope, like you would on a boat, so you could throw this line to someone.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where the ice screw could, in an emergency, like if you're too far to connect to a tree, like you could put this ice screw in, and that could be a way to anchor you in if you needed to throw a rope to someone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because obviously the rescuer, if you end up in the water too, that's not helping the situation.
Yeah, and I do skate with a helmet as well. And then if it's really cold, I'll wear goggles and be totally unrecognizable. but overall, I feel that ice skating, or this backcountry ice skating, it's an accessible form of winter backcountry activity. I think it's easier to get into than skiing, actually, just because the equipment is cheaper. Like, I suppose if you have skis, it helps because you already have the boots and then you would just get the blades. But it's less gear, a heck of a lot less gear than backcountry skiing. And I feel more confident, I guess, judging the ice, maybe because I grew up around ice. But I feel more comfortable judging ice conditions than I do backcountry ski conditions. So I will never go backcountry skiing if the avalanche danger is like even above whatever one of the lower ones.
Immediate orange or above,
yeah,
probably stay home.
And I have like the beacon probe shovel, but I just feel, I feel that I am more capable of being a little bolder on the ice. And I feel the risk of failure, like you could still get in some trouble on the ice, but I feel the what would you can gauge the risk. Like if you know the ice is shallower, then your risk is less than if you're on a deeper lake, like out there in the middle,
like, right? Because the deeper, yeah, the lake, usually the longer it takes to freeze. And
yeah, yeah, like say Ski Lake, like I was more cautious there than maybe on like when I've gone skiing on Potter Marsh, because I know if I fall through there, it's just a few feet deep and I could easily jump out.
Right.
So that also gauges my patterns of what I do. So I have fallen through the ice. I was just walking on a lake. I was wearing jeans. This is in Wisconsin. I think I was like 18 or 19. I hadn't actually even walked on that many frozen lakes, that just because in Milwaukee, if I was skating, it was always on this, on a pond. Like I wouldn't just go walk on a random lake. So anyway, that was I did fall through there because my friend thought she saw open water, and I thought, oh no, I'll be fine. So I did fall through. I'm lucky I did have that experience where I'm still okay. Like it was, I went up to maybe my waist and I was able to get out easily. I could touch the bottom and then get inside quickly. But since then I have not fallen through, but that has made me much more cautious of outflows or where the water meets a lake, because that's how I fell through, is
right.
I did not pay attention to that.
Yep. Anywhere where there's going to be moving water tends to be a lot less stable. And it could be fine 1 week, and then 3 weeks later conditions can change and that spot can be weak again. So yeah. Definitely take some extra caution in those areas.
Yes. Yeah. So there are safety risks, but overall I don't want that to inhibit people from still going out. So again, there's inherent safety, but still just go for it, I guess, is my advice.
Yeah, it's like you say, it's a pretty accessible backcountry outdoor winter activity. I mean, you're, depending on which lakes you choose, there's a certain amount of getting there involved. I mean, there's lakes that you can drive pretty much right up to, and then some you got to trek a couple miles, whether you're skiing or snowshoeing or snow machining or however you choose to get there. But it's very much a choose your own adventure. And as far as the safety risk goes, I mean, there's the ice thickness, obviously, and then there's falling and bonking your noggin is a risk, no matter whether you're on whether you're at an ice rink or whatever else. I mean, that's always a danger with ice skating. But beyond that, there's certainly a lot less factors as far as, you know, compared to like avalanche danger. There's less moving parts and less to be concerned of, I think.
Yes.
In backcountry skating. But then there's still all the winter stuff about, you know, dress in layers and especially ice skating too. So how the heck do you stay warm? Because there's no break from the wind, right? If you're out in the middle of a lake somewhere, it's not like you're in the trees or in a gully where you get a little break from that. So how do you, what's your like outdoor layer situation?
So for me, hands and feet are really important. So so for hands, I just do what I normally would, and I wear my big mittens with hand warmers. And then ice skating, so I still do use my ice skates, because the difference between using the ice skates and the Nordic blades, it's kind of like a long sea kayak versus like a kayak where you would, that's a lot shorter, that you can turn easier. So the figure skates are like the shorter kayaks. You can do a lot more fancy footwork and turns, and you have two edges instead of just the one. However, there's no insulation in my figure skating ice boot. Like,
oh,
yeah, or
you're meant
little.
To be inside an arena somewhere.
Yeah. So I still will ice skate outside sometimes, but I just can't wear my figure skates because I can't keep my feet warm in those. Whereas if I have the Nordic Blade, those attach to my skate ski boots, and so those are made for you to be outside in cold weather, so there's a lot more insulation. So I think those help a lot, just being able to use the ski boot. I do have a friend who has the covers for her boots. She said those help.
Yeah, they're like neoprene, basically. They're kind of a pain to get on, but they do kind of cut the wind, especially if you're in windy conditions.
Yeah, and then this year, so I went out skating when it was like bitterly cold and like minus 20 at Portage Glacier.
That would be in January, I'm assuming.
Yes, yeah, so in January. So in January, the big lakes froze because the smaller lakes freeze first, right? And then it doesn't matter if there's snow in between when the smaller lakes freeze and when the bigger lakes freeze. So there still was this period of cold without snow where the second round of skating where you could hit up the bigger lakes because the little ones were covered in snow. So anyway, for the bigger lakes, it was really cold, and I wore my ski helmet that I would just for like downhill skiing, and I wore my ski goggles and a face mask. So the idea is when it's that cold, just don't have any skin exposed and don't shy away from wearing your ski helmet and ski goggles because it made a huge difference.
I'm sure. Yeah, exposed skin is going to get windburned on top of everything else. Yeah, so, okay, so here's a question for you. So I'm a terrible ice skater, so yeah. I do not move very fast, which on one hand, I guess, is, like, safer, probably, if I'm going to, I don't know. I like to convince myself there's a benefit to being slow. I know there really probably isn't. But so the faster you go, on one hand, maybe the warmer you stay because you're moving more. Or is that not true because you're just so efficient with technique that you're not like burning as much, like is a better skater? Is the benefits of skating faster not really a thing? You're not getting warmer because you're so dang good at it. Like if I'm moving fast skating, I'm working pretty hard because I'm terrible. But I imagine you know what you were doing.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't thought of that. I will say one other plug for the Nordic Blades is that I think people who don't skate find them easier to use because you can just kind of get by with a walking motion. I will say that if you like skate properly, like you are more efficient, but I don't know, I guess the Nordic Blades might be an answer if someone is uncertain of their skating ability. As far as if keeping warm, I've never thought of that actually. Because I suppose, theoretically, you and your companion, like if I was skating with you, we might be...
I would wave at you in the distance is what would happen in that scenario.
Yeah, so I would probably just turn around and skate back to... Yeah, because you're right, moving, you do need to move to keep warm. If you just stand there on the ice, you're going to get cold. But I don't think I feel any colder if I use good technique. I guess much in the way of skiing, like you just move more
right
efficiently, faster, but you're still moving, so that's still keeping you warm.
All right, so there's a vote for learning your technique. Are there ways to learn technique? I mean, you grew up on ice skates, so you probably don't even remember the learning process.
Yeah.
But if somebody is getting into this as a teenager or an adult, are there, I don't know, videos they can watch or somewhere you would recommend going for tips on technique?
Yeah, probably YouTube videos because I did watch those when I first got the Nordic Blades just to see how people moved on those. I did take a lot of lessons as a kid, and I guess I still do remember some of what they said. Because what I see people do a lot is they'll kind of shuffle like they're walking, whereas the skating motion is you want to push off and glide and then push off and glide and not just shuffle.
So you got to commit to getting your weight on one foot at a time. That seems to be where most people break down. Like, I feel more stable on two things.
Yeah. And I did take skate ski lessons. And so I found a lot of the motion translated. So if you know how to skate ski, then translating that, there are differences. I would say that if you're an adult, I think adult ski lessons tend to be more common than adult ice skating lessons. So you could always take a skate ski lesson and then know that you would not also just be learning how to ski, but you could one day use that to go ice skating.
Right. The one big difference, though, if you want to slow down on skis, not, again, high-quality technique, but you can always snowplow. Is that, yeah. That's probably not a thing on Nordic Blades, I'm going to assume.
Yeah, I usually will still hockey stop, or I'll go into the turn to stop myself. I suppose you could, like, crash into the side of the lake is an option of
That's
stopping.
My option when I'm, like, hockey skating. And there's the board, so then I stop.
Yeah, so that kind of stopping still is an option, or another person.
That seems rude.
Yeah, or you could, I remember learning this when I was growing up skating, like, you could drag a skate behind you, too, as a way to stop.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and I have got another... I've not sustained any injuries backcountry skating, but growing up I did have some ice skating injuries and I'm still out there skating. I learned that hockey skates stop differently when you're going backwards than when you are figure skating, at least to me, it felt different. And so I fell and hit my chin and got a couple stitches. And then, this one's a little more serious injury. I did have a hand run over by an ice skate.
Ooh.
Everything's okay. Like, I'm all fixed up and everything.
But all digits still accounted for.
Yes. Yeah. And they never were separated from me, but, I did learn from some mishaps I had as a kid where I did fall through the ice. Like, I did have some serious skating injuries. So now I'm very careful when I'm, to look out for those things, but it never made me not want to go back out there and skate.
Right. All right. Well, we are coming up on the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a couple minute break. This is Adventure Talks on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman, and we're in the studio with Elizabeth Appleby, who's talking about backcountry ice skating. And we will be right back. Stay tuned. And we are back. This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. And this is Adventure Talks on the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jenny Nyman, and in the studio with me today is Elizabeth Appleby. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello.
Wisconsin Transport works for the city of Kenai. You're the city planner.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
This is probably a dumb question, but so how much of a planner are you in your outdoor? Because either this is going to be hilarious and you're going to say, like, I don't plan anything, I just wing it, or you are one of the most, like, well thought out, well packed people.
I'd say it varies. So I do admit that right now I'm already thinking about things I want to do this summer. So I want to bike the beaches here. Because you can, if you plan it out right, you can bike all the way from Kenai to Homer if you have ways to cross the major rivers. So I do tend to think about that and, like, read everything I can. But planning an outdoor trip is always very weather dependent. Mm-hmm. So I also purposefully don't plan every weekend so that I can jump on something with the weather that is totally not planned. And that's kind of how ice skating has to be, because the only planning you can do is read about where to go, but you can't predict when the ice is going to be good.
Right. Just because you have designated that next Thursday is the day that I shall go ice skate at this place. Like,
yeah.
That doesn't mean that's going to work out.
Yes.
So
yeah.
In the first half hour, we talked about gear and some safety considerations. And for your talk tomorrow night, 6:30 p.m., by the way, at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center, you're going to have photos of some of the trips that you've taken. And I don't want to totally steal your thunder from that, but just to talk a little bit about giving folks ideas of places they can go, what is your favorite trip that you've taken so far?
My favorite trip is Portage Glacier. And well, I use the term trips because most of the time skating, it ends up being a day trip for me. Not always, but usually. But Portage Glacier is just it's just so awesome because before you even see the glacier, the mountains are right next to the lake, and then all of a sudden you're around the corner, and then you're looking at a glacier, and it's like, really? I'm able to ice skate to a glacier on my Saturday, and.
And of course, some of us, perhaps slightly older than I, remember when you could see the glacier from the visitor center, too. So Portage Glacier, of course, is on the highway to Whittier right before you get into the tunnel.
Yeah, so I'd estimate probably just under 2 hours if you're coming from the Kenai Soldotna area, depending on the roads. But so we'll just say 2 hours. Drive north. You park in the visitor center and then... you just start skating from there, basically.
How far or how long does it take to get from like the where you get on the ice to where you're over by the glacier?
Yeah, so I think it's about 3 miles to the glacier, and so it takes maybe 2 or 3 hours. Like if you spend some time looking at the glacier, I found it's always windy at least one of the ways you're skating on that lake.
That's usually how that works.
Yeah, and Jenny and I were talking about different, like just the condition of the ice. So I was telling her how 1 year when I skated to Portage Glacier, I actually used my figure skates because the ice had frozen. Just it was so glassy smooth, and there were lots of people out that day, and so I was able to do that skate just in figure skates. Whereas this year, I used my Nordic Blades because there was some snow on the lake at the start, and once you got past that, then it was pretty good, but the ice hadn't frozen as smooth, and so the blades help you just get over the bumps in the ice too. And
you can have little cracks and ridges and other stuff frozen into the surface of the ice. I mean, that's, you know, backcountry on the bright side is it's beautiful and you're out away from people and places and it's a cool experience. But on the downside, it's like you said, it's not Zambonied. It's not going to be, you're not going to have that automatic for sure smooth ice experience.
Yeah. And one other safety thing is to not get too close to a glacier if you're, well, no matter what you're doing.
Well, yeah, you can, full stop, not get too close to a glacier.
I think the recommendation is to stay about 50 feet back because it doesn't stop calving just because the ice is frozen. So a chunk of ice could still come off the front of the glacier. And that did happen last year. Like everyone was fine who was on the ice, but it was really a reminder that the glacier could still calve even when the lake is frozen. But I've never been there when it's calved at Portage in winter. But it's just really beautiful to be able to skate in front of a glacier. And I think it's things like that are what I'm grateful for, that since I live in Alaska, where I can drive a couple hours and do something like that just on my weekend and not plan it ahead of time and just see like, oh, I think it's going to be good this weekend. The lake is frozen and just go for it.
Do you have places that you would like to go that you haven't made it to yet?
Yeah. So I have never skated at Gruen Glacier. If you time it right, the lake there will freeze and then you can take the water taxi out of Homer, and then get there and skate. And I have seen photos of people doing that and it just looks really cool because, at that lake, the icebergs, are quite a bit away from the face of the glacier. So there you can like skate around an iceberg, which, isn't always the case really at Portage. There aren't the icebergs frozen in the ice like that. So I do want to go there, and then most of my skates have been where I drive to the lake and then either skate on that lake or then I do some sort of connected series of lakes. So I would like to maybe just bring skates when I'm going to a cabin and then try out a more remote lake. And Hidden Lake. I haven't been to Hidden Lake. That is on my list in the refuge.
Oh, yeah. That's a pretty easy one to get to.
Yeah, and I've heard that one is good for skating. So this year I did make it to Skelack Lake and Kenai Lake and then the Swanson Lake system. So since I'm relatively new to the Kenai area, it's been fun to skate those lakes since I hadn't done that before I moved down here. I hadn't really explored the refuge. So maybe next winter I'll get to Hidden Lake.
Yeah. And the Skelack area, there's tons of lakes out there, obviously, and they're road accessible. And word of caution, though, some are a lot more shallow than others. Like Botnitnin, the first one you come to if you're coming from Soldotna onto Skelack.
Yeah.
Lake Road, the first one on the right is Botnitnin Lake, which good luck spelling that one. I always have to look that up. But that's one of the first freezers. Like that one and Arc Lake in Soldotna, those two are pretty shallow and those freeze up real early and they're usually really stable. Skelack, obviously, you got to be pretty careful of. There's a lot of water moving in and out of there with the Kenai River passing through. So even if it's good at a boat launch, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be good throughout the whole lake. And Hidden Lake is oddly deep for being around, you know, like Engineer Lake and Botnitnin, which aren't as deep.
Yeah.
But Hidden, I guess they do scuba diving training in Hidden as well, because it is kind of deep. So
neat.
Probably something to keep in mind if you're going to go out there. Make sure you're checking the ice thickness, of course.
Yeah. So when I went to Skelack Lake, what I ended up doing was there were some people who were riding snow machines on the lake, and I talked to them before I got on the ice, because I was actually by myself when I, someone joined me later, but I started off by myself, and so I wanted to, like, really make sure the ice was good. And so I talked to some snow machiners, and then I ended up just following their track.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. That's generally, unless you see a hole in front of you suddenly, and then, okay, maybe I won't continue to follow them. But
yeah,
generally, if a snow machine is fine out there, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, and I mean, caveat, they could have, so if you're following someone's tracks, like, they could have encountered some rougher ice, or you might not know how old the tracks are, but in this case, since I had just talked to them, it worked out really well, where I felt safe following their track, just relatively close to shore, and it was just so cool because it's this huge lake. Like, because I've seen it when it has like the big waves and in summer. And it was just really cool to think about how I could never stand in that spot in summer. And I think that's one really cool thing about skating is some of the skiing that I do or other winter activities. I know I'll be, I can be in that same spot in summer. Whereas, being on the ice, I know unless I'm in a boat, I won't just be able to stand on that spot ever. And I kind of like thinking about that sometimes when I'm on the lake.
Yeah, it's a cool vantage point, especially in Skelack. There's a lot of different striking landscapes kind of all around that lake that you get to look at from, like you say, a totally different perspective than you're normally getting in the summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think sunrise and sunset, because when the good ice occurs, so the smaller lakes usually are November and January, or sorry, November and December, and then the bigger lakes freeze usually January, and then there could be another window if stuff melts and refreezes. But those little lakes, like November and December, is when our lowest light is, and I think the sunrise and sunset with just that low angle sun and then reflecting on the ice, I think those are, I just love the sunrise and sunset on the lakes, and they have been late enough and early enough that you can watch it, the sun go up at 10 a.m. and then go down at 4:30.
Yeah, you feel like you've really had a big day if you've been out there from sun up to sundown. Like, well, in Alaska in the winter, it's not quite as impressive, but still you feel like I've conquered space-time today.
Yes. And I did mention on my list of places I want to skate is more of the cabin trips. I did stay at the Dolly Varden cabin this winter when the ice was good, so you could skate out to the cabin.
That's another one out Swanson River Road, right?
Yes, yeah. And so that's another one where it's like you can drive there, but then it's really cool where you, because there's that cabin there, you could just skate across the lake. And so that's where I remember in particular watching this really beautiful sunset, because I was just going back to the cabin. And it was just cool to be out there on the lake watching the sunset.
Nice. And that's kind of a fun lake. It's got a lot of like nooks and crannies and bays and different, you know, lakes are around here aren't these perfectly oval depressions. Like probably more in Wisconsin, you get just like the roundish depressions that water.
Yeah.
But in Alaska, I mean, a lot of them tend to be, it's one lake, but you feel like you're in like four different terrains. You go around a corner and you can't see where you parked anymore. And
yes. Yeah. Well, like Kenai Lake is this huge lake that winds around, and I skated just one part of it in the, just this winter, but I have heard people like who have just kept gone and or kept going on it, and I like from I think it was the Trail Lakes Campground all the way to Cooper Landing.
Yeah,
or
you
like
can
that.
You can make an endeavor out of that lake for sure.
Yeah, so that's another one on my list.
Where did you? What was your access point when you did Kenai?
My access point was just by the Sunrise Inn in Cooper Landing.
Oh, okay.
And there was a little trail through the woods, and then the day I went, there was still some open water, so I basically skated out to where the open water was, and I didn't feel so safe anymore.
Did you skate out and say hi to the fishermen who were still out there?
Oh, I did not see anyone fishing, but I could tell people had been there before me.
Yeah, there's another, I think, good access point on the other side of the lake off Snug Harbor Road. I think there's like a kind of public use beach access over there that people
I've camped there in summer.
I think that's another spot people will go put into ice skate, because it seems to be kind of stable ice over, and you're a little farther away from the bridge where where the river comes out. So
that's another reason I wanted to do this talk, because for backcountry ice skating, I did go by myself for a little bit, but I feel much safer if I have at least one other person with me. I guess I feel safer like hiking alone than I do skating. Just in case something happens, I know that someone's there to help me dry out, or like it's just safer to go with someone else.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so I partly wanted to do this talk to connect with more skaters down here, so that maybe I could brought in my circle of people I have
ulterior
to
motives. I
yeah,
feel so used.
So I do have some ulterior motives. And so on Thursday at that talk too, like I know people can share things that I don't know about, because I don't know everything. Like I think the last couple of talks I had been to, like someone had written a hiking book, and another person was planning to write a book on skiing, and I know each of them were still just sharing their own experiences, but I don't really have any book writing plans. I just love ice skating. Like, I'll pick that over anything else in winter when the conditions are good. And so I just wanted to share that and maybe motivate people to not be afraid to just get out there and skate. And then hopefully maybe broaden the community of Nordic bladers in the Kenai area.
Yeah, they are out there, but they do not seem to be as active on the social media that South Central. Like, I know they exist and I know they're doing stuff, but they don't get on that page.
Yes.
And so it's mostly the posts that I've seen from the Kenai Peninsula seem to be like Anchorage or Valley people coming down.
Yes.
And then I'm like, I know we have our own people who are out there.
Yes.
I don't know if they're just not social media people, or they just want to like keep it to themselves, or but I know they exist. So.
Yeah, that was part of my ulterior motive. So, because I came from Anchorage, like I still I know that outdoor community, and so I wanted to connect more down here to the outdoor adventure community. And I have noticed people are posting hiking more on the Kenai. Like, I've seen people post about hiking in the refuge this winter, and even on the beaches. And but I haven't seen it as much to that Nordic Skate South Central ice skating group. And So even though I can be a little shy about posting, I'm like, oh, all these people are going to like see my post. Like I did post a couple of times there just because I wanted a little Kenai representation. So I posted when I went on Ski Lack and Kenai Lake.
Yeah, that community works two ways. So it is super useful to be able to kind of lurk on there and get trip ideas and get condition reports. But it's more helpful if you then submit your own condition reports and trip ideas on there too. So yeah, maybe a little plug for participating rather than just scamming information off of those groups.
Yeah.
Because it is, guilty of it is so condition dependent with ice
it
skating.
Is. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. So I feel it's one of the more important activities where having this place to share that information is much more important than say hiking where it's,
yeah, hiking, you can make it work with a broad range of conditions, you know, throw on a rain jacket or change your footwear or whatever, and you can still make it happen. But man, ice skating, if there's too much snow, if there's whatever, it hasn't frozen solid or it hasn't frozen smooth, like that's make or break your trip a lot of times.
Yeah. And I have experienced it, like on the Swan Lakes loop. Just because it was so good this year and it doesn't freeze every year. And it was solid this year. Like it was almost this like call on the Nordic skate group where someone had gone out and that motivated a lot of people to go out that particular weekend because it wasn't good the next weekend because the frost had built up on the lake.
Yeah, you need some kind of bat signal that you can flash to the skating community, like, all right guys, it's on, get out here.
Yeah, and it's super fun to just I don't know, see all these people and know that you're having a good day. And but it's the level of crowds, this is also why I like Alaska. It's still like you still don't feel like the lake is really crowded, like even on that loop, like we pass people, but most of the time you still had all of the lakes to yourself.
Yeah, even, you know, Portage, I would imagine, is a pretty popular one, or Potter's Marsh, or like around here, I mean, Arc Lake can be pretty popular, and Headquarters Lake, when the ice is good there, you'll definitely run into people, but it's not like what is it in Anchorage, Cuddy Park?
Yeah, with or Westchester.
Yeah, like, where you have to strategically plan your route through the masses of people so you're not getting tripped up. So.
Yeah, and to me, that kind of skating is... I still like it. That's the kind of skating I grew up with, where it was more like this groomed, like area that you could skate on. But I much more prefer doing the backcountry skating. And I agree. I don't go like I went there initially, but then I kind of stopped going to those locations because I knew there were too many people. And you're kind of skating the same loop too, right? So,
oh, Elizabeth, you were becoming an Alaskan. You said those magic words. There were too many people. That's how you know you were acclimating to Alaska. Like, I don't do crowds anymore. Not my thing. And I don't think I mentioned this, so it's going to be kind of a non sequitur, but I always like to throw out, anytime we're talking about ice-related things in the winter, my favorite safety tip is to get on the Google or the internet, whatever search engine of choice, and look up Dr. Popsicle. Have you heard of Dr. Popsicle?
No.
So this is this crazy Canadian professor who does cold water research and specifically how the body responds to cold water immersion. So he has this awesome video of purposefully falling through the ice, and then he proceeds to narrate to the camera for like an uncomfortably like 7 minutes about, okay, well, this is what's going on with my body right now. And as you notice, I'm shaking, but I'm still fine and you can live. And the main thing is to remain calm. And this is how you can get yourself out. And so on one hand, it's really entertaining. But on the other hand, that is the best, most informative source that I have ever found about how to survive and get yourself out of a cold water immersion. So that's my little kind of creepy tip for the day. So anyway, Dr. Popsicle and Elizabeth, this has been Adventure Talks on KDLL. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.